You're listening to a Radio 1 91 FM podcast.
You're tuned into R1 News at 1. Every weekday from 1 till 2 p.m., our dedicated news team brings you the hard-hitting stories, interviews, and culture pieces from across Otepoti, Dunedin.
You're listening to The One, Radio 1, and this is the R1 News at 1 with myself, Jemima Lorimer, and Isla Tarring. It is also Radio 1's 40th birthday week! Yay! Stay tuned for a huge program of stacked birthday fun, including takeovers, cool interviews, and more. We've got the bulletin for you today, and we'll be back with that very, very soon. But first up, this is T.G. Shand with Fat Wood.
Here are the R1 News at 1 headlines.
This is the R1 News Bulletin for Tuesday, the 15th of October. I'm Isla.
I'm Jemima. In student news, last Wednesday, close to 200 Otago students and staff marched to the clock tower in a pro-Palestine march. It resulted in the arrest of one student. The march started at 12 p.m. at the Museum Reserve lawn. Following a health and safety briefing, the march entered campus, passing through the link in song before beginning their chanting. From here, they continued past the Castle Lecture Theatre and Richardson Building and made their way to the Clock Tower Building, where speeches were made by student Namuga Nakayiza, politics lecturer David Jenkins, and student Otago Students for Justice in Palestine organiser Neve Ashton. In a statement released after the protest, OSJP said of their demonstration, "This is the most recent in a series of peaceful student actions calling on the university to publicly condemn the genocide in Palestine and to boycott and divest from Israeli corporations." As the march made their way through campus, they chanted, "Divulge and divest," and for the uni to, quote, "take a side, it's been 1 year of genocide." Speakers took aim on the university's stance of institutional neutrality. As reported by critic Te Arohi, Jenkins, speaking on the behalf of Otago Staff for Palestine, acknowledged that, quote, "Institutional neutrality is certainly an important principle, but it was never meant to serve as an ultimate trump card against all political stances," end quote. Critic also reports that in Namuga's speech, she pointed to the uni's pension fund, UniSaver, and alleged that it could be invested in military contractors such as Albert Systems and Palantir, an allegation that the university has yet to respond to. The demonstration then moved to an attempted sit-in, as planned beforehand by OSJP. A statement released by the group after the protest said they were forcibly held back, pushed and shouted out of the clock tower. Quote, "A campus watch officer grabbed a student who had made it past the front doors and was standing in the entranceway. In an attempt to wrestle her backwards, he collided with an interior glass door, which shattered." Critic Te Arohi reports that one person was arrested for willful damage and police told Critic that charges will be considered. A statement from Vice-Chancellor Grant Robertson following the incident said it was important for students and staff to protest, quote, "However, there is no place for vandalism or disorderly action, particularly when the safety of others, including staff and students, is put at risk. This protest crossed that line," end quote. Critic points out that this is almost the exact same response as that given by Acting VC Professor Tony Ballantyne regarding the Everything Room protest last year. In a follow-up statement, Grant again said it was highly regrettable that the incident occurred, but stood by his previous statement that the protest crossed the line when they attempted to enter the clock tower, and that he cannot comment in detail as to not prejudice any processes to be worked through. On Saturday, at the monthly March for Palestine, speeches given by representatives from Otago Staff for Palestine and Otago Students for Justice in Palestine criticised the uni's role in and their public response to the incident on Wednesday and their follow-up actions to the students involved.
Grant Robertson, speaking to the New Zealand Herald, reflects on his first 100 days as Vice-Chancellor at the University of Otago. One of his main focuses is based on the financial governance of the university. He also comments on the financial constraints that the university has. Robertson says, "The big part of it for me is to also not just looking at how we save money, but how we generate more revenue." Robertson emphasized the need for a more collaborative approach, and when asked on potential collaborations or policy changes to the university's financial situation. In October, the University of Otago Council had approved projects to create a permanent presence in Queenstown and the Lakes District. In regard to this, Robertson says, "We want to create a dynamic presence in the region that drives excellence in teaching and research." He also comments how this project aligns with Otago's Vision 2040 plan, outlined in the plan which was made in 2022. It claims that Otago will have a focus on effective capital planning and project delivery, and how the university will be diversifying our funding sources through additional benefactor funding and entrepreneurial activity. In addition, Robertson stressed the importance of a quality hospital for the university's medical program. In regard to the opening of a third medical school in New Zealand, Robertson says, "We think we can train more doctors at Otago and do that in a more effective and efficient way." Warwick Bagg, the dean of Auckland's medical school, echoes a similar sentiment. He says that all the government needed to do was increase the number of students it allowed to study medicine and fund those students. In local news, Dunedin City Council is considering changes to its local alcohol policy. During the District Licensing Committee's hearings about late-night impulse alcohol purchases, there were proposals on reducing off-license trading hours, a standardization of on-license opening times, and reduction of maximum trading hours. Location-specific restrictions were also considered. These proposed changes were done partially to take accountability for the high volume of alcohol consumed within Dunedin. Kevin Meechan, alcohol, psychoactive substance, and gambling advisor for the council, says there has been cases where late alcohol sales contribute to harmful behaviors, including preloading and excessive drinking before entering late-night venues. The Dunedin City Council is currently consulting the policy and is interested to hear local input. This can be done through making a submission on their website, with consultations closing on the 14th of November. In national news, from November 1st, Pharmac will improve access to three cancer medicines. The medicines are cetuximab, which is used for bowel cancer, metamustine, which is used for relapse or refractory chronic lymphocytic leukemia or blood cancer, and pitremrexed, which is currently used for two types of cancer. In addition, Pharmac has widened access to two chemotherapy treatments for people with chronic lymphocytic leukemia, along with changes for people that take pitremrexed. David Seymour, Associate Health Minister in regards to Pharmac, said, "We want to build a world-class health system, and that requires access to world-class medicines." Liam Willis, Gut Cancer Foundation Executive Officer, says, "This outcome will see people finally receive treatment that is standard of care, helping them to live longer and healthier lives." In international news, the second round of an emergency polio vaccination campaign in Gaza aims to aid 500,000 children. Like the first round of vaccinations, which happened early in September, the second round will have three phases where children under the age of 10 will be administered the vaccine. Along with that, vitamin A will be co-administered to boost overall immunity among children. A minimum of two doses are needed to interrupt poliovirus transmission if at least 90% of all children are vaccinated in all communities and neighborhoods. Polio is a highly infectious disease caused by a virus and has the potential to cause paralysis in a number of hours. The virus is able to spread person to person. While there is no cure, it can be prevented through vaccinations. In July of this year, a 10-month-year-old child was found to be paralyzed with the variant poliovirus type 2. The campaign is being conducted by the Palestinian Ministry of Health in collaboration with the World Health Organization, the United Nations Children's Fund, the United Nations Relief and Works Agency for Palestinian Refugees, and other partners. SpaceX's booster was recently returned to its initial launch pad after being launched up over 100 kilometers in altitude. On October 12th, GMT, Starship, a 222-meter-tall spacecraft, was launched. 5 minutes later, the booster had disengaged with the main body. Through the use of engines on the component, the booster was able to descend back onto its initial launch mount. The booster was caught using the metal claws of the launch tower, also referred to as the chopsticks. In addition, the launch tower itself was also referred to as Mechazilla. The Starship itself landed in the Indian Ocean after it had tipped over and exploded. On his Twitter, Musk said, "A few outer engine nozzles are warped from heating and some other minor issues, but these are easily addressed." He also comments on how Starship was designed with the intention to be reusable within an hour after initial liftoff.
And to wrap up, it's Radio 1's 40th birthday week. To celebrate, we have an absolutely stacked on-air program that includes lots of special interviews and takeovers. Today from 2 to 4pm, former Breakfast host Jamie Green will be taking over the waves, counting down Radio 1's top 40 tracks from tracks 30 to 21. And tomorrow on the news show, we'll also be inviting back former news producer, the incredible Bonnie Harrison, to talk about her time post-R1 as an RNZ producer. We are also hosting a birthday party gig on Thursday night at the Crown, featuring the lovely Becca Caffin band, Ortipoti Icons of Futurians and Space Bats Attack, and ending the night with R1 resident DJ Risk back-to-back with DJ Bax. Tickets are $25 waged, $20 unwaged, and you can get them from Under the Radar. This has been the R1 News Bulletin for Tuesday, 15th October. Today's bulletin was written and read to you by Isla Tarring and Jemima Lorimer.
Those were the headlines for today on R1 News at 1. Catch up on previous R1 News wherever you get your podcasts or head to r1.co.nz/news.
Stay tuned for some more news. We've got STEM news with Isla later on in the show. But first up for you, this is Uninspired by Kairi.
STEM News with Isla Tarring on the R1 News at 1.
Hello, it is I, Isla, and recently the Nobel Prizes have just finished up, and for the Nobel Prize in Chemistry, it was recently awarded to David Hassabis, John M. Jumper, and David Baker for their work in protein structure prediction and computational protein design. Hassabis and Jumper were from Google DeepMind, and they had developed an AI model which is capable of predicting protein structures. The AI model is known as AlphaFold, and both the database and server are currently freely available to the scientific community. However, this is not the first software to have developed protein structures. Beginning in the 1990s, Baker himself, as well as his colleagues from the University of Washington, had developed a software known as Rosetta. Using known structural fragments of proteins, an entirely novel protein could have the potential to be designed. The first ever novel protein was when Baker and his team designed a protein, put it through Rosetta, and an amino acid sequence was produced. While both softwares are similar in this sense, they both differ in their approach. Rosetta is able to calculate the energy of a biomolecule through the use of known energy functions, which is derived from the physical and statistical terms, so the physics of how these different types of bonds and molecules interacts. AlphaFold, on the other hand, predicted protein structures through neural networks, which incorporate physical and biological knowledge to aid in machine learning. In addition, AlphaFold is more accurate, fast, and reliable. In addition, there was also the Nobel Prize for Physics, which was also awarded to a neural network discovery and advancement. Jumper, during a DeepMind press briefing, says that it's humbling every time we train AlphaFold on years of effort. Each data point is years of effort from someone else. In a similar vein, the dedication and the deduction of protein structure is incredibly collaborative and valued. Many other Nobel Prizes have been awarded for techniques that were able to determine protein structure. Some include Christian Anisfin, which was awarded in 1972 for discovering the relationship between an amino acid sequence and protein conformation, which acts as the basis for the entire way that proteins are learned in our modern sense. In 1985, Herbert A. Humpton and Jerome Carle got an award for finding protein structures using X-ray scattering techniques on crystal structures, and more recently, Jacqui Dubochet and Joachim Frank and Richard Henderson were awarded prizes in 2017 for developing a technique that fires beams of electrons at frozen proteins to deduce the biomolecule structure. Basically taking pictures based off how the different electrons were able to reflect off of the protein structures. Knowing the structure of a protein is especially pertinent when trying to make vaccines, for example. David Wiesler, a structural virologist at the University of Washington, and his team were able to use AlphaFold to develop a vaccine for the Lange virus. Wiesler said that the machine learning has enabled something that would not have been possible otherwise.
Happy 40th birthday, Radio 1!
Destiny, I wanna see where you and I would go. Or destiny, just set me free and I'll set my...
The R1 News at 1 with a forecast.
It is currently the 15th of October and it is not too bad today, weather-wise. It is about 9 degrees Celsius right now. There's going to be a high of 11 later today. Just pretty cloudy, maybe a few showers as well, but mostly going to be cloudy for the rest of the day. Seems we've finally gotten out of the rain, which is really pleasant.
The R1 News at 1 with a forecast.
That has been the final Tuesday R1 News show of the year. Thank you so much for tuning in today, and make sure you always stay listening to Radio 1, especially during our 40th birthday week. And make sure to join us at the Crown on Thursday night. Any other final words, Isla?
None at all. Yeah, just get excited for birthday week.
Cool. Thank you for listening to the R1 News.
You've been listening to R1 News at 1 here on Te Reo Irirangi Kotahi. The R1 News is uploaded daily wherever you get your podcasts, or head to r1.co.nz/news to get yourself all caught up. Additionally, you can follow R1 News NZ to keep up to date with all our newsworthy happenings.
That was a Radio 1 91 FM podcast. You can find more of them at r1.co.nz/podcast.